Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Shlomo, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions this week, I want to start off by saying, unfortunately, we told you so. We warned about what would happen if Barack Hussein Obama was re-elected to a second term. We warned that it would lead to pressure on Israel that would endanger Israel in a very, very serious way. Barack Hussein Obama hasn't even been sworn into a second term yet. That's going to happen on January 20th, 2013. And yet, already, we've gotten a taste of what it will be like during Obama's second term. We've already seen the consequences. We've already gotten just a little taste of the consequences of Obama's re-election, and of how right we in JTF were when we said that his re-election would be a catastrophe for Israel. It's also going to be a catastrophe for America, for Western civilization, and for the whole world. But let's speak about Israel here for a moment. The Netanyahu-Lieberman government agreed to a ceasefire without even scratching the Hamas Muslim terrorists that paralyzed all of Israel with thousands of missiles. They agreed to a ceasefire that was nothing short of a tremendous victory for the Hamas Muslim terrorists. And they agreed to that ceasefire because of pressure from Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton. Netanyahu did not want a ceasefire. No one in Israel wanted a ceasefire. They wanted to continue and to defeat the terrorists and to at least inflict severe blows against the terrorists. That's what they wanted to do. Of course, if we were in power, we would wipe the terrorists out. But Netanyahu, at the very least, wanted to inflict very severe blows on the Hamas terrorists. He did not do so. Instead, they're stronger than ever because of what happened. And he agreed to this ceasefire under pressure from Clinton and Obama. Hillary Clinton ran to the Middle East right away, demanding that Israel accept a ceasefire agreement that is a disaster for the Jewish state. Obama called up, and you can go and Google and find the pictures of him on the telephone urging Netanyahu to accept the proposed ceasefire that Hillary Clinton drew up. A ceasefire that was proposed by Muslim Nazi Egypt, Obama's new big ally, the new big friend and ally of Obama and Clinton, Muslim Nazi Egypt, that is run by the Nazi Muslim Brotherhood, an organization that, among other things, spawned Al-Qaeda and spawned Hamas. And the dictator of Egypt, Mohamed Morsi, being an ally of Al-Qaeda and an ally of Hamas and an ally of all the terrorists, he proposed this ceasefire because he knew it would be a tremendous victory for Islamic terrorism against Israel, against America, and against the Western world. And Clinton and Obama immediately started pressuring Netanyahu, who is a weak and cowardly leader, to accept this. And he did, and he predictably did. Remember, we told you that there would be pressure on Israel from Obama and Clinton to do things that endanger Israel and that empower Israel's enemies. And we told you that the weak, cowardly leaders of Israel, like Netanyahu and Lieberman, would give in to that pressure. And because there are weak, cowardly leaders in Israel, it is so dangerous to have a Muslim anti-Semite like this in the White House, where he never has to run again, where he never has to face the voters again in a second term. We warned that this would be very dangerous. And surely enough, look at what happened. Israel has agreed to something that is very dangerous, and that is a terrible precedent, and that greatly strengthens the Muslim terrorists everywhere because of pressure from Obama and Clinton. Mitt Romney would not have pressured Netanyahu to accept this ceasefire. Mitt Romney would not have told Netanyahu to stop his campaign against the Hamas terrorists. Just as Mitt Romney would not be pressuring Israel, as Obama and Clinton are doing every day now, not to strike the Iranian Muslim Nazi nuclear bomb-making program. Israel's not striking Iran because of pressure from Clinton and Obama. If Mitt Romney were president, there would be no such pressure. Israel would get a virtual green light to do whatever she wants to do against Iran. And the same thing would have been true in terms of the Hamas terrorists. And so, even though Romney was no saint, and we weren't thrilled with Romney either, for Israel, it would have made a tremendous difference if Mitt Romney had been elected president. On this issue, you already see the differences. Romney was not going to call up Netanyahu and start squeezing him to accept an agreement from the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And so, I mean, Romney at least was loyal to the United States. At least Romney understood that the Hamas terrorists and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt not only want to destroy Israel, they also want to destroy America. They're enemies of America too. And so he was not going to tell Israel, you should give a victory to America's enemies in Hamas and in Egypt. Romney wouldn't have done that. But Obama and Clinton, who are traitors to the United States, who are not loyal to the United States. Obama's a Muslim. He supports the Muslim world. And Hillary Clinton and her evil, ugly daughter were studying Islam. They are great supporters and admirers of Muslims. They are on the side of the enemies of America and Israel. And so you see the big difference here. You see what has happened here. And it's not just the ceasefire with Hamas terrorists, this big victory for Islamic terrorism. It's not just that. It's also this continuing, as we mentioned, inaction by Israel as Iran gets closer and closer to building nuclear bombs, God forbid. And if Netanyahu agrees to give cave into pressure on something like this, when he had the support of over 90% of the Jews in Israel were supporting his campaign against the Hamas terrorists. He had almost unanimous support from the people of Israel for this. And the vast majority, according to leftist polls, the vast majority of Israelis disagree with his decision to have a ceasefire. They thought he was wrong. They wanted him to continue. The vast majority of Israelis disagree with what he did. And yet, when he's under pressure from Obama and Clinton, he always caves in. If that's true now, don't you think we were right when we said that's going to be true on other issues? Look, it's already happening with Iran too, which is much more serious. Iran is much more serious. The threat from Iran is much greater than the threat from Hamas terrorists in Gaza. The threat of nuclear bombs and a nuclear holocaust, that's much greater. That's an existential threat against Israel. And he's caving in on that too. And don't you think that when he's pressured by Obama to accept the so-called Palestine state and go back to the pre-1967 borders, which are only 6 to 9 miles wide, national suicide for Israel, don't you think that there's a great danger that he will give in on that as well, that he'll cave in on that as well, like he always caves in, he always gives in to pressure in the end? Always gives in and excuses it and tries to make it look like it's a victory for Israel when everyone knows it's a defeat. Everyone knows it was a capitulation and a cowardly bending to the will of this Muslim in the White House. Everybody knows that. So Israel's very survival now is in grave danger because of Obama's re-election. This is why we worked so hard to defeat Obama. We were unable to defeat him, unfortunately. We tried to defeat him in 2008. We tried to defeat him in 2012. We were unable to. It was too big for us because we never had the funds and we never had the support we needed to do what had to be done. And I believe that if JTF were a mass movement, I believe Obama would have been defeated. You better believe it. You better believe it. If everyone in America had seen our message proving that Obama's a Muslim and proving that Obama's anti-American and proving that he's an anti-white racist, the whole campaign would have been a different campaign. And yes, the media would have condemned us and would have called us racist and called us whatever else they want to call us. Of course the media would have done that. Of course the media would have spoken about my past in the JDL and what I did and what I went to prison for. They would have spoken about all that, but it wouldn't have mattered because I wouldn't have been running against Obama. I wasn't running for president. And yes, all the Republicans and the establishment would have denounced us, a big deal. In the meantime, the American people would have been exposed to clear, documented proof. Obama in his own voice making racist attacks on white people. Obama in his own voice saying that white people are cruel and arrogant and greedy. Obama in his own voice making statements that are so racist that it's so clear that He didn't have to go to Jeremiah. He went to Jeremiah Wright's church because he agrees with Jeremiah Wright, because he's a racist and an anti-Semite himself. If the American people had known that, and if the American people had known that he was a Muslim, I'm telling you, he would have lost. As it is, he won by 51-48%. It was a 51-48 election. A swing of just 2 percentage points, and Romney would have won. And I'm telling you, if the American people had known that he's a Muslim, that he's an anti-white racist, had known about his past, instead of the myths and the fantasies and the lies that they were given, you would have had a much larger turnout among white voters. You would have a much larger turnout among Republicans and conservatives, because millions of whites stayed home and did not vote for Romney. But you would have had a larger turnout if we had been in the mix with a big campaign. We could have done it, but we didn't have what it took. We didn't have the money. We didn't have the resources. And you saw, by the way, our videos. I mean, our videos were so much better, so much more convincing than the weak, pathetic commercials of the Romney campaign and of the Republican National Committee and of the so-called super PACs. They were terrible. They were terrible. They were so weak and so defensive and so apologetic and so pathetic and so politically correct. Obama was hitting Romney left and right mercilessly. And Romney was being a nice guy, and his commercials were all just mildly criticizing and offering some unemployment statistics. I mean, it was pathetic. Pathetic. Our videos hit Obama right between the eyes in a way that would have swung this election in the other direction. And yes, it could have been done, and believe me, it would have been done. But it's over. It didn't happen. And we're stuck, unfortunately, with Barack Hussein Obama for 4 years, and he doesn't have to run again. We're stuck with this disaster. And Israel is stuck with weak and cowardly leaders, and you see what's happening now. You just see now just the beginning, just the tip of the iceberg of the danger that lies ahead now. Imagine Netanyahu caving now if Obama and Clinton come up with an, or Clinton's going to be leaving the State Department, whoever replaces her, you know, that other black Jew-hating animal, Rice, if she replaces Clinton, or whoever does replace Clinton, it doesn't matter. Obama will come up with a plan for a Palestine state. Egypt will mediate. Muslim terrorist Nazi Egypt will be the mediator. The Muslim Brotherhood, they'll be the mediators. They're very impartial mediators. And then everybody will pressure Netanyahu to accept it. What a disaster. We told you so. We were right. You know, the time has come for people to wake up and understand. JTF is the one group that has been right from the start. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because we are faithful to the one Jewish leader that was right from the start on issue after issue. Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. Rabbi Meir Kahana, may the memory of the saint be immortalized. Rabbi Kahana was right on issue after issue after issue, because he really believed in the Bible, and he understood what the Jewish people are supposed to be. He understood the destiny of the Jewish people, and he had the guts to stand up for what a Jewish leader is supposed to stand up for. And we are truly faithful to his legacy, and that's why we are right consistently. And that's why everything we warn you about comes true in the end. And that's why we have to wake up the Jews of Israel to prevent catastrophe. We have to wake them up. We have to reach the Jews of Israel so that there will be mass resistance if there's an attempt to expel the Jews in Judea and Samaria and create a Palestine state. There has to be mass resistance. Right now, the people running for office, Naftali Bennett, Michael Ben-Ari, Uri Ariel, all of these people are either from the Yesher Council, or in the case of Michael Ben-Ari, he's a phony pseudo-Kahanist who has caved in again and again and does not represent those that will encourage the Jews to resist. And by the way, we're not telling people to resist with violence. We're talking about the type of resistance that Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King would have approved of. The type of resistance we saw in Amona, when thousands of Jews did resist an expulsion, and it succeeded in stopping the Israeli government from touching any more Jewish communities or outposts for 2 whole years. When Jews do resist in massive numbers, when thousands of Jews go there and resist with their bodies and say, you're going to have to drag us away, kicking and screaming, we're not leaving, this is our land, that is something the Israeli government has a hard time coping with. That's our real hope for stopping this. Unless there's a miracle. I mean, God can miraculously, of course it could be a miracle, God can miraculously create circumstances in which we won't face this type of catastrophe. Maybe, God willing, he will, and of course we have to pray that he will. But we had better be ready if that doesn't happen. We had better be ready, because the very survival of Israel and the Jewish people is on the line. And what happens to Israel and the Jewish people, by the way, affects the whole world in the most profound way. If you want to know what's going to happen to the future of the world, to the future of America, the West, and the world, look at what happens in Israel. That will be your guidepost as to what will happen with the rest of the world. And so we need help. We need help from everyone in our movement. Help us with our videos in Hebrew and in English. Help us continue. When we have Hebrew videos, that's very important as well, because we're trying to reach the people of Israel and wake them up. Very important. I know that most of our members on our great English forum don't speak Hebrew. Doesn't matter. You know that if the YouTube and Google search engines don't care if your comments are in English or in Hebrew. Even if it's on a Hebrew video, you can make comments in English. It's still going to help us. It's going to help promote that video. If you like it, if you favorite it, and if you make comments, and if you promote the video on YouTube and on Facebook, doesn't matter if you understand the video in Hebrew or don't understand it, whatever. Doesn't matter. You're helping us promote our message. It's important. And of course, our English language videos, you do understand. And we need your help with that too. We're working on English language videos. We're coming up. We're going to continue a vigorous campaign, God willing, of English language videos as well. We're going to be fighting Obama here in America as well. We're going to be fighting to weaken him and prevent him from having the type of strong hand he needs to carry out his evil policies. We want to turn him into a lame duck president as quickly as possible, and create as much resistance to his policies as possible, and try to stir up as much of a backlash to his policies. His policies will fail. Eventually they'll fail. But if they don't fail in time, and if he gets the media and everybody else to support him, and he gets the Republicans all collapse like cowards, and the Israeli government collapses in front of him, and all these terrible things happen, I mean, God forbid, it'll be a terrible catastrophe until people finally wake up and realize what a failure he is. Then it'll be too late, God forbid. So we've got to wake people up now. We can't stop fighting, and we can't stop trying to resist him in Hebrew and in English. We've got to keep fighting. We don't have a choice. And so we need your help with the videos. We need your help on the forum to make the forum an interesting and inviting place so that more people will join us. And yes, we need your help financially. The great JTFers who have helped us loyally with credit card donations, who have gone on to the JTF.org main English page and the Hayamin.org main Hebrew page, on our main pages, on our main English page, which is JTF.org, on our main Hebrew page, Hayamin.org, we've got on the top donate buttons on the top. It is very convenient and very easy with a credit card. It takes just a few minutes, and it's with PayPal, so it's very secure. Just make an easy, quick donation, and it just takes a few minutes. And we have great JTFers who've been doing that. We need your help now more than ever. And just as important, the great JTFers who, instead of using their credit card, we have JTFers who prefer to send checks, money orders, cash donations through the regular mail to our post office box, equally important. We need your help. I think that people who listen to this program and who are on our forum understand. I mean, don't you agree that our videos were great videos? That our message was an important message? That we have been right on the issues? That this is a terrible thing that Obama was reelected? It's a terrible thing that we have an Israeli government that's giving in to him already. If you agree with that, you can't be silent. You have to help. You have to speak up. You can't be silent. I can't promise you success. I can't promise you success. What I can promise you is that we will do the very best we can and speak up as best we can and skillfully, and we will present our message effectively and skillfully. You've seen that. You've seen our videos are excellent quality. We will skillfully and effectively present the message as best we can. And you should be part of that effort. Whether we succeed or not, God willing, I hope we do succeed. But we've got to fight. We've got to fight now because everything is at stake. If you truly care, you've seen what happened to little Israel this week. If you love Israel and care about God's people in the Holy Land, then you're going to help us. Because you know that we are the address for the truth. We're the address for the truth. And the people of Israel should be seeing our message. You know they should be seeing it. You know that it's the right thing to do. We're the address for the truth for America as well. You know the American people should be seeing this message. It's a shame they didn't see it. It's a shame, you know, we reached the people that we reached with our videos. We had hundreds of wonderful videos, but we only reached the limited number of people that we reached on YouTube. We should have been reaching tens of millions of voters. We couldn't do that. We didn't have the budget to do that. But we did the best we can with the hundreds of thousands of people we reached. But you know that it certainly won't hurt, and it'll only help if more people see our message. And so let's not be silent. Let's not be inactive, and let's not be apathetic, God forbid. We've got to get involved now. We've got to start fighting. This is the moment of truth. You've seen that what we warn about is right, and you've seen our message is effective. And I know you agree. I know that our great JTFers agree that more people should be seeing this message in Hebrew and in English. So help us do that. Let's all be in this fight together. And maybe if God sees that no matter what setbacks seem to happen, even Obama was reelected, it was a setback. We have an Israeli government that stinks. That we knew for a long time. No matter what setbacks come along, if God sees that we continue to fight with all our heart and all our soul and continue to warn and continue to issue these messages, how do we know that God won't do something to push forward this message and to enable us to change history? Who knows? Who knows? One thing I am sure of, and I'm sure of this, if you think I've been right on any of these issues, there's one thing I'm telling you that I'm sure that I'm right about. If really, really a huge number of people saw our message on a regular basis, if that would happen, we would change history, and this would be a much better world. That I'm sure of. And I know that our great JTFers who've been with us for the past several years are also sure of that. That hasn't happened yet. We haven't caught the break that we need to achieve that, but we're looking for ways. We're always looking for ways to somehow figure out how to do that, to reach huge numbers of people. But if the day comes when, God willing, we can, you better believe that will have an impact and this will be a better world. In the meantime, we've got to keep fighting and we've got to keep telling the truth. That's our job. That's what we're in this world for, to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And may God help us, because we're fighting for justice and righteousness, and all we want to do is bring truth and justice and righteousness to the world. Anyway, I thank our great JTFers for that and for all the help that they have been giving, and let's just hope that our new campaign reaches as many people as possible and makes as big a change as possible. Just remember one thing. This is not hopeless. It's far from hopeless. Because if we can convince just tens of thousands of Israeli Jews, if we can create a situation where we were like a catalyst, and we push the Israeli Jews who are against surrendering land, who are against the Palestine state, who agree with us, because there are quite a few Israeli Jews agree with a lot of our message. If we could just push them into being willing to resist and being willing to do what many of them considered doing in past situations, if we could just push things in that direction and convince people to do that, and convince people to create a mass resistance, we could save Israel and the Jewish people from terrible catastrophe. That is not impossible. It's not impossible to do that. It's not easy. It's very hard to do, but it's not impossible. Because a lot of Israeli Jews agree with a lot of what we're saying and are very worried about the things we're speaking about. So it's not impossible. Let's keep that in mind. Anyway, I thank our great JTFers for all of their help. And now we're going to go to the great questions from our great members. And we start out with the great Yimach Shmo to Obama, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what will happen when Iran goes nuclear?" Unquote. God forbid. God forbid. But unfortunately, if that happens, it's going to be a different world. It's going to be a much darker and grimmer world, a much more dangerous world. And there is a danger of a nuclear holocaust. If Iran goes nuclear, it will lead to a situation in which many Muslim countries will begin a nuclear arms race. They're going to want to go nuclear. And if you have numerous Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Syria, Iraq, Egypt, all wanting to acquire nuclear bombs, you can imagine how dangerous that would be. If that happens, it's only a matter of time before Muslim terrorists get their hands on nuclear bombs. So the danger is tremendous, tremendous. And that's why we've got to do everything we can to convince Israel to ignore Obama and to strike and destroy Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. Anyway, thank you, Yimach Shmo. And now we go to the great Debbie Schaefer, who writes, and I quote, "Where can I donate to help the Israeli people with supplies and donations? Can I send donation to Chaim?" Unquote. Not for supplies, Debbie. We're not sending supplies to Israel right now. Our main focus right now is to wake the people of Israel up and to inspire them to create new communities in Judea and Samaria, to resist when there are expulsions of Jews from Judea and Samaria. Now we have an election coming up in Israel, a Knesset election on January 22nd, and we're basically trying to alert the people of Israel to the fact that these politicians running are not the answer. That's not going to save Israel. The politicians are phonies. The only thing that's going to save Israel is if the people, the citizens, in mass, resist any surrender of Jewish land and stand up and force the leaders to do what has to be done. So our main effort, when you contribute to us, our main effort is going to be now to wake the people of Israel up. As far as who you would give money to if you want to send supplies to Israel, that I don't know the answer to that, Debbie. I'm sorry. I don't know the answer to that. But anyway, thank you very much. And now we go to the great Gematria, who writes, and I quote, "Chaim HaTzadik, please tell us about Hillary Arafat's dirty dealings with Mark and Denise Rich. Will this be a factor in 2016? Unquote. Okay, great question as always, Gematria. The billionaire Mark Rich is a self-hating Jew who made oil deals with Muslim Nazi Iran during the Iranian hostage crisis, when the Iranians were holding 52 Americans hostage. The billionaire Mark Rich was making illegal oil deals with Iran. It was against the law to deal with Iran at that time. He ignored the boycott and was in fact making oil deals and enriching the Iranian terrorist regime. In fact, throughout the 1970s, the billionaire Mark Rich was buying and selling oil from Iran and Iraq. And this is when Iraq was ruled by Saddam Hussein. He was buying oil from Iran and Iraq throughout the 1970s, making a profit with the worst enemies of America and Israel. And so he was indicted by Rudy Giuliani for illegal dealings with terrorist Iran, for violating the boycott, the American, it was against the law to deal with Iran as a terrorist regime at that time. And Rudy Giuliani indicted him for violating the law on that. Also indicted him for massive tax evasion. He fled the country, but he was fully pardoned by Bill Clinton on the last day that Clinton was in office. He was fully pardoned by Clinton in exchange for huge contributions that he and his wife made to the Democrat Party and to the Clinton Library. Can you imagine if this had been a Republican? I mean, this was such obvious corruption. On Clinton's last day in office on January 20th, 2001, he gave a full and unconditional pardon to this billionaire, self-hating Jew who was enriching the terrorist regimes in Iran and Iraq in exchange for huge contributions to the Democrat Party and to Bill Clinton's personal library that he established in Arkansas. I mean, can you imagine what an obvious example of the worst type of corruption? And by the way, these two self-hating Jews, Mark and Denise Rich, were also involved with Ehud Barak and the Israeli government traitors. They were also involved with the dirty dealings over here. I mean, what an unbelievable example of the filth that we're dealing with when we deal with the Clintons and when we deal with these self-hating Jews. Will it be an issue in 2016? I hope so. I hope when Clinton runs in 2016 that it does become an issue. I hope all of the corruption, all the dirt and filth of this corrupt, evil woman, Hillary, Sodom, Arafat, I hope all of that becomes an issue in 2016. Anyway, thank you very much, Gematria, and we certainly, God willing, will be exposing Hillary Clinton in 2016. You know that we will. Anyway, thank you, Gematria, and now we go to the great Dr. Dan, our voice of reason and common sense and logic. And the great Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "How should Israel respond to rockets from Hamas going into any part of Israel, whether damage, death, or miss? And don't be shy with your answer," unquote. Okay. Israel should kill anyone who's involved with Hamas. Israel should have had carpet bombing and saturation bombing of every possible target. And if the Muslim terrorists who are civilians deliberately work together with the Hamas terrorists, which is what they do, bomb them all. If the bombs are coming from civilian areas, those civilians are harboring those terrorists. Bomb them. In addition to that, Israel gives free electricity, free water, free food, free education, and billions of dollars in aid to the Hamas terrorist population in Gaza. They'd be starving if not for the Israeli Jews that they're murdering and firing on. Who ever heard of anything so insane? I mean, how could anything be so insane? Israel gives all of these services for free to the Arab Muslim Nazis who live in Gaza. I mean, this is just unbelievable. While they're terrorizing the people of Israel. I mean, where have you ever seen anything so crazy? Where have you ever seen such an example of people digging their own graves? What a sick people. If we were in power, you know there'd be no electricity, no water, no food, nothing from the people. People of Israel would give nothing to their enemies in Gaza. We'd give them something, but it wouldn't be food, electricity, and water. That's for sure. We'd give them something else. And they would leave. We would get them out of there. Because Gaza is Jewish. Those Arabs would be out of there, and Jews would move into the Gaza district. They'd be starving without support from the Israeli taxpayers, and we would cut that support off immediately. Nobody can force Israel to hand over billions of dollars in aid to Gaza. We would cut all of that off immediately. And they would want to leave, and leave desperately. And we'd get them out of there. They go to Egypt, they go anywhere. They could go to Gehennom, they could go anywhere. But they're not staying in the land of Israel. And the Jews would move in. We would begin a massive program to encourage Jews to move in. And the land of Israel would be for the people of Israel and not for the Muslim Nazi terrorists that want to destroy the Jews in Israel. That would be our plan. And Dr. Dan, I've done many Hebrew videos, and I've said in those videos, I promise you, that if we take power, I tell the people of Israel, we will restore true security for the people of Israel. The world might scream and yell, and people may not like it. They may not like what we do, but you will be safe in your homes and in your schools and in your hospitals and on your streets. You will be safe again if we're in power. We will restore security to the people of Israel. We will do what it takes to make sure that the people of Israel are safe in their own homeland. Anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Dan. Great question, of course. And now we go to the great green light to go, who writes, and I quote, "Do Republicans proposing amnesty believe illegal immigrants, quote, live on bread alone, unquote, as Rabbi Kahana suggested liberals believe regarding the Arabs, unquote?" Yes, I think that is part of the problem, of course. They don't believe that the people from third world countries would like to take over the United States. They don't just want jobs and opportunity and to be happy blending in as happy Americans. They want, you're making a very good point here, they want their cultures from the third world to become the dominant culture of America. They do not want American culture. They do not like American culture. They do not like what the United States stands for. When you have illegal aliens coming to the United States by the tens of millions from Africa and Latin America and Asia and other places, they don't want American culture. They want their own culture. And that's why there isn't the type of assimilation and the type of becoming proud to be Americans. You don't have that type of situation like you had in past immigrations, and you're not going to. And Republicans do not understand that. Or if they do, they're not pursuing policies that would show that they understand that. That's for sure. Because amnesty is insane. Completely insane. The illegal aliens in this country should be thrown out of the country, should be rounded up and thrown out of the country. That is the solution. And it should be made very clear that there'll be no tolerance for hiring them or for bringing them in the country in the future. If that happened, and if there was an intelligent policy, a truly intelligent policy on this, America still would have a fighting chance and could still be saved. Anyway, thank you very much, Green Light to Go. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "One, purely tactically, or tactically, did I say it right? Tactically, purely tactically, okay, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Do you condemn the actions of Amir? Please specify," unquote. Okay, Tag Mechir is referring to Yigal Amir, who killed Yitzhak Rabin, who was the former so-called Prime Minister of Israel. And when you say tactically, I think what you mean is, was this good or bad for Israel or the Jews, the fact that Rabin was assassinated? Well, first of all, I want to make very clear that we're a law-abiding organization. We do not encourage assassinations and we do not encourage illegal activities. However, if you're asking me what the result of Rabin being eliminated was, the result was that you had a leader, Rabin, who was a so-called former general, who was a so-called former chief of staff of the army, and so people thought he was someone who was security-minded, even though he was a disaster as a general. But there was a mythology created around him. And so he was able to carry out aspects of the Oslo agreements and surrenders and retreats that his successor, Shimon Peres, was unable to carry out, because Shimon Peres was never in the army, and the majority of Israelis consider Shimon Peres to be a wimp, which he is. And so they don't trust Peres, and they don't trust him when he makes decisions as prime minister. And so when Rabin was eliminated and Peres became prime minister, I do believe that it slowed down the process, that it was a blow and it slowed down the process of dismembering Israel and dismantling Israel. I do think it slowed down that process. And so I hope that answers your question. And now Tag Mechir writes, "Two, what would be the punishment for the women of the wall provocateurs?" Unquote. The women of the wall are women who go to the Western Wall and go to the men's section of the Western Wall. Now, there's a men's section, there's a women's section. And why are there separate sections for men and women? Because in Judaism, in Torah Judaism, we don't want men and women praying together. And there's a reason why. When a man is standing next to a woman, or when a man is surrounded by women, it's hard for him to pray and concentrate on his prayers. He's thinking about other things. He has other thoughts in his mind. And we know from experience that that is true. We want the man, at least during the time of prayer, to, you know, to have a clear mind and to be able to just think about God and think about what he's praying to God for, thanking God and requesting from God whatever he's requesting in his prayers. And so this is why there is a separation between men and women at the Western Wall. Because we want, during prayer time, this is just during prayer time, we do want people to think pure thoughts. But you have these feminist lesbians and leftist, evil, self-hating beasts who come to the Western Wall and deliberately try to disrupt what goes on there and try to force their way into the men's section and try to force themselves upon everybody at the wall, upon the religious Jews that are there. If we were in power, of course, we would arrest them. They would be arrested and they'd be taken away and we'd make it very clear that this isn't going to be tolerated. And we throw them in jail. If they're going to do this, they're going to sit in jail. We are not going to allow them to disrupt the religious rights of people at the wall. The people at the wall are overwhelmingly religious. And 95% of the people at the Western Wall do not want this provocation to take place. And they're either going to respect the Jewish religion, the Jewish faith, and stop being a bunch of self-hating feminist traitors, or they're going to sit in jail. But they're not going to engage in disruption and violation of people's religious rights. Anyway, thank you very much, Tag Mechir. Great questions. And now we go to the great PJC, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. What are your thoughts on the sport of MMA? Do you find it barbaric or a legitimate man's sport? P.S. I am a huge MMA fan," unquote. Okay. First of all, MMA is mixed martial arts. I think that's what it means, right? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it means mixed martial arts. PJC, you're not going to like my answer, because I don't think that people should, for entertainment purposes, hurt each other and damage each other and cause brain damage and other things. And, you know, people are killed in some of these matches. I mean, there have been deaths in some of these matches. I think that things like this, and as well as professional boxing and many of these other events where people are entertained by individuals hurting each other, I don't think that's appropriate. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm against, of course, I'm obviously in favor of martial arts. I think martial arts are very important. I think people should learn, whether it's martial arts or boxing or shooting or what we call street fighting. All of these things are very, very important, and people should learn how to defend themselves. But to use these skills to just hurt someone else, to really hurt and injure other people, and in some cases people get killed, or people you see these ex-boxers and people who've been involved. I mean, some of them have brain damage. I mean, it's terrible, some of the consequences. I mean, to use that and to have that as a form of entertainment, I do think is barbaric. And again, I'm 100% in favor of using these skills for self-defense. These are skills that people should learn. People should be taught these skills. I think that people should be trained in these skills. When I was the head of the JDL, we taught people karate and we taught people martial arts and we had boxing classes. We taught people self-defense when I was running JDL. We had self-defense courses that we taught people. We had black belts, very skillful black belts that came in and gave people courses in self-defense when I was running JDL. I am in favor of people learning, but it should be used truly for self-defense and not to glorify violence for the sake of violence and turn it into some sort of entertainment. That's my view. Anyway, thank you very much, PJC. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim. Will it matter if Obama's policies fail if the media and academia portray his failures as successes?" Unquote. That's a good question. I guess it depends. Franklin Delano Roosevelt's policies were a disastrous failure. Disastrous failure. I mean, the Depression continued right up until World War II. Until World War II, we continued to have a Depression. I think it was about 8 or 9 years Roosevelt was president, and the Depression continued. You know, Roosevelt was reelected to the presidency. He was elected and reelected 4 times. This was before you had a constitutional amendment with a two-term limit. The reason we have only 2 terms, a president can only run for 2 terms, is because of Roosevelt. After Roosevelt died, the Republican Congress and Republicans pushed through, with the support of some Democrats who felt that Roosevelt had been in for too long, they pushed through an amendment limiting a president to only 2 terms. But before then, presidents were allowed to run as much as they want. And Roosevelt ran 4 times and was elected and reelected 4 times. So for about 8 or 9 years after he was elected, the United States continued in the Great Depression. We could not get a recovery, couldn't get out of that Great Depression because of his policies. And yet he so cleverly portrayed his policies before the American people, and he was such an effective and charismatic speaker. And the people supporting him and backing him were so effective, and the media people backing him, the radio people that were at that time, radio was the big was the big medium. The newspapers were mostly Republican, but radio was you had CBS and radio. Radio was already left wing. They were backing him and promoting him, and so he remained very popular. And people to this day think he was some sort of great president. He was a terrible president, a very evil president, and a terrible president. So is it possible that Obama can, even though he fails, that they can portray it as a success? It is possible. That's why we have to be there to make sure people understand that when they're suffering and when things are going bad, don't pretend it's good. Okay, that's what we had in this past election. Things were bad and everybody pretended it was good. And the media told us it was really good. So, of course, we have to be there to show that it's not good. But there is a danger of what you're describing. Of course, that's always a danger. That's why we have a chance. I never said, by the way, that there will be a backlash when Obama's policies fail. I didn't say that. I said there is a chance that there'll be a backlash. That's our chance, that there's a chance that his failures will eventually lead to a backlash. But that may be up to us to show the American people what a failure they are and why his policies are responsible for that failure. Anyway, thank you very much, Maimonides. And now we go to the great British sword, who writes, and I quote, "Hey Chaim, don't look now, but I think our country's run by child molesters." Reference, BBC scandal, plus Tony Blair halted queries as Labour cabinet names showed up, unquote. British sword, you are so right. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. I mean, the BBC, what a bunch of left-wing, vile hypocrites. I mean, having people running the BBC who molested little boys and molested women and molested little boys. I mean, what a horrific scandal. What a horrific scandal. Just unbelievable. And it's so obvious that the full extent of the scandal is being covered up, and that the BBC is being allowed to continue to escape and continue to get support from the government and support from the taxpayers. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. Absolutely. There is a cover-up going on now, and unfortunately the British people are not getting the whole truth about the extent of this scandal and the involvement of people who were involved both in media and in government in the scandal and in the cover-up. Both, because the scandal is terrible and the cover-up is also terrible. And there's no question that the true dirty deeds over here are not being exposed the way they should be. Thank you so much, British Sword. Excellent point. And now we go to the great Say No to Islam, who writes, and I quote, "Rush Limbaugh has recently been called racist piece of blank by black rapper Ice-T. Your thoughts, please," unquote. And the reason I said blank is because it's, you know, it's a dirty word. It's a word for excrement. It's a curse word that the Ice-T used. What a piece of filth. What a low, inferior, ignorant piece of savage filth. Ice-T. This is the guy whose big album was called Cop Killer. You remember that? That was the name of a cop killer where he glorified murdering police officers. He actually glorified murdering police officers, and this is okay. This is deemed okay. That's acceptable. And this animal then supports Obama, and Obama's happy to get his support, and you know they all want his support for someone who supports cop killing. And by the way, he didn't only support Obama. He also supported the Nazi Ron Paul. Yes, he also supported the Nazi Ron Paul. He issued statements saying that he thinks that Ron Paul is good for black people and that Ron Paul's philosophy is going to help black people. Yep. What a low piece of filth. And you know, I'm not a big Rush Limbaugh fan because he's part of the conservative establishment, the Republic. I don't like establishment people. I mean, I think the establishment has let us down badly. But Rush Limbaugh, if it's Rush Limbaugh versus Ice-T, you know whose side we're going to be on. I mean, Ice-T, what a low, ignorant, stupid, vile, inferior piece of filth. And that's the future of this country right now. That's where this country's going. What a disgrace. Anyway, thank you very much. Say no to Islam. And now we go to the great Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, "Do you think having a left-wing president makes children growing up during that time more prone to left-wing thought?" Unquote. Sometimes. It's a great question, and sometimes, yes, sometimes. It depends. Under Jimmy Carter, it didn't, because we had Ronald Reagan. You see, Ruby Stars, it depends who the opposition is. Somebody asked before about Obama's failures. Will that cause a backlash, or will the media portraying his failures as successes prevent a backlash? And the answer is, it depends who the opposition is. Ronald Reagan was a very effective opposition, even though there were things Reagan did that I also don't agree with. Ruby Stars, you know that we're to the right of all the politicians, way to the right of all the politicians. Okay, that's true. But Ronald Reagan, as a communicator, was extremely effective, and his campaign was very effective. He started off with a double-digit deficit against Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter was running ahead of him double-digit with a double-digit lead. And in the end, Ronald Reagan beat Jimmy Carter. He carried 44 out of the 50 states. I mean, it was an incredible landslide. Reagan's campaign was the best run campaign I've ever seen in my lifetime. I have never seen such a clever, brilliant, ingenious campaign. Just ingenious. His 1980 campaign and his 1984 campaign, Morning in America. It's Morning in America. I don't know, well, most people are too young to remember that now, going back to 1984, but I remember it. Wow, what a powerful campaign. I mean, just unbelievably brilliant. He attracted talented people, clever people, ingenious people. He attracted talent. He inspired people who wanted to work with him. And he, as a candidate, was just a great messenger. So it was the perfect mix. And even though the media supported Jimmy Carter, but he overcame all of that. It's a shame we didn't have that against Obama. If we had had something like that against Obama, Obama also would have been in a lot of trouble. So Jimmy Carter was a left-wing president. And because of Reagan, and because of Reagan showing people what a disaster Carter was, what a failure he was, and convincing people of that, because of that, being left-wing became unpopular among children growing up. Children in the 80s were conservative, became right-wing. In fact, Ruby Stars, if you look at the voting pattern in 1980, 1984 election, 1988 election as well, if you look at the voting pattern in the three presidential elections held in the 80s, the younger the voters were, the more likely they were to vote Republican. The younger the voters were, the more likely they were to identify themselves as conservative or as very conservative. Yep, Reagan did that. He created that. So if you have a president who's convincing, who's inspiring, It can put people on the right track. With Obama, unfortunately, together with the media, we have more and more people being led on the wrong track. But Ruby Stars, let's remember something here. One of the reasons why the majority of young people support Obama and why there's such strong support for him among young people is because of demographics. Almost half of the young people in this country are not white. I mean, of course Obama's going to be very strong. We know he's very strong among those groups. I don't remember the exact statistics, but it's over 40% are non-white. The majority of babies being born in America now are non-white. So, of course, voters between the ages of 18 and 29, those are voters that we usually identify as young voters, voters between the ages of 18 and 29, of course, they're going to be more likely to support Obama. Over 40% of them aren't white. So he starts out with a huge demographic advantage right away. So, you know, we've got some tough challenges. We've got some tough challenges, and only a very clever, intelligent, concerted, politically incorrect campaign can still wake people up and still turn the tide. Ruby Stars, I don't think it's hopeless. I don't think it's hopeless yet. It's certainly more difficult now than it was before the election. I mean, this election was a big blow. It was a big, big, devastating blow to us. But I still don't think it's hopeless, but you know, the odds are now more against us than they were before. But we're not giving up yet. We're not giving up. We're going to continue to fight. Anyway, thank you, Ruby Stars. And now we go to the great Selhar, who writes, and I quote, "If someone not Orthodox wants to be addressed Rabbi or Rav, should one respect his or her wish? Is it okay to offend him, her by ignoring the title?" Unquote. Absolutely, Selhar. It's we're not allowed to refer to someone as Rabbi or Rav if they're not a Rabbi or not a Rav. Of course, we're not allowed to. The only person who can be a Rav, Rav, by the way, for those who don't know what we're referring to, Rav is Rabbi in Hebrew. You can't be a Rav if you don't have smicha. Smicha is the halachic ordination for a rabbi. Someone who doesn't have smicha al pi halacha, which is the ordination according to Jewish law, is not a Rav. And we're absolutely forbidden to call them Rav. And it doesn't matter if they're offended, too bad if they're offended. We're not allowed to refer to them with that title. We're not allowed to. Anyway, great question, Selhar. Thank you. I appreciate that. And Selhar, of course, is also very active on our Hebrew forum. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "To what degree do you believe that exit polls in U.S. elections are accurate? Please discuss the exit polls in the recent presidential election," unquote. Okay, very interesting question. Unfortunately, the exit poll in this recent election was accurate. It said that the exit poll basically predicted that Obama was going to win, and he did. I mean, the exit poll showed Obama with a lead, a small lead, and he won by a small margin in the end, even though it's being portrayed as some huge landslide because of the Electoral College. In reality, in the popular vote, it was actually very close, but it showed Obama with a slight lead, and he in fact won with a slight lead. So the exit poll was actually quite accurate in this past election. But there have been some notorious examples of exit polls that were wrong. The most famous recent example was probably in 2004. In 2004, the exit polls showed that John Kerry had won the presidency. And of course, that didn't happen. George W. Bush beat him. George W. Bush in 2004 won both the popular vote and the Electoral College vote. In 2000, Bush lost the popular vote to Al Gore, but in 2004, he won the popular vote and the Electoral College vote. But according to the exit polls, John Kerry had won in 2004, and in fact, the Kerry campaign was ecstatic in 2004. They were sure they had won because all the exit polls, they knew that the media was leaking that the exit polls were showing Kerry as the winner. So that was 2004 was an example of where they were wrong. So sometimes they're wrong, sometimes they're right. Anyway, thank you, EB22. And now we go to the great Meir Kat. And Meir Kat, by the way, lives in Eretz Yisrael. He made Aliyah. He lives in the land of Israel. Baruch Hashem, thank God. Meir Kat now writes, and I quote, "Erev Tov Chaim, I know you are not much of a Rubio fan for his stance on immigration, but what is his position on Israel, unquote? Okay, great question. I don't like his position on Israel either. I saw the speech that he gave to AIPAC, and he spoke about the peace process, and he spoke about Oslo, and he spoke about a so-called Palestine state and the two-state solution. So I think his position on Israel stinks, frankly. I think it's terrible. So I don't like his position on Israel either. It's just, you know, and I don't like his position. You're right. I don't like his position on immigration, and I don't like his position on a lot of issues. I hope that he is not the Republican candidate for president in 2016. Anyway, thank you, Meir Katz. Very important question. And now we go to the great Brennan fan who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. Obama won by 3 percentage points and 3.5 million votes. Really, would anything have affected that sort of a miracle? Really, would anything have affected that short of a miracle, unquote. Okay. Actually, Brennan fan, I did, you know, Brennan fan is one of the people on our forum who is like a mind reader. When Brennan fan asks a question, there's a good chance that it's something that I intended to speak about on the program. Brennan fan has a way of knowing what I'm going to be speaking about. And I did actually address this issue in my opening remark. Yes, I do think we could have changed it. Again, he won by 3 points, Obama, but that means a swing of 2 points would have given Romney the victory. Just 2 percentage points? A swing of 2 percentage points is impossible? Of course it's not impossible. Just 2 percentage points? Of course that's doable. Sure, he could have. I mean, there's no question Romney could have won. There are many reasons why Romney lost. I'll give you another reason that I touched upon before, but let me just maybe go over it one more time, and that's television commercials. Romney and Obama both spent about the same amount of money in the last month of the campaign on television advertising. But Obama had twice as many television commercials as Romney. Now, how is that possible that Obama had twice as many TV commercials as Romney when they both spent the same amount of money? The answer is Romney paid much more for his television commercials because he ordered the television commercials the week before or a few days before he put them on the air. He would order them last minute. His campaign ordered the commercials and booked the commercials last minute, which is much more expensive. When you book the commercials way in advance, you get a much lower rate. You get a cheaper rate. And so Obama and his campaign were cleverly booking the commercials way in advance in order to save money, while the Romney campaign, they wanted to be able to make decisions last minute, strategic decisions. So they stupidly were booking things at the last minute and paying twice as much, sometimes more. And so Obama was showing double the amount of commercials Romney was showing, even though they were both spending the same amount of money. I mean, that is just complete incompetence. It's incompetence, Brennan fan. And the Romney commercials were terrible. Terrible commercials. Just generalized commercials showing him he's a nice guy, he's a wonderful man, he's a family man. I mean, the commercials were awful. That's not what you speak. People, you don't speak about that he's a nice man, a nice family man. Oh, yes, I mean, it's true, they made him out to be a villain. Okay. But he should have gone for the jugular. The best defense is a good. The best defense is a good offense. He should have pounded Obama on the economy, on Obama's racism, on Obama's Islamic background, on Obama's disloyalty to America. Obama was saying that Romney was disloyal, that Romney was going to be helping China, was loyal to China, was a businessman who's cutting deals with China at the expense of American jobs, and you had the Obama commercials with American flags and patriotism, and Obama standing up for America. Romney let Obama get away with that? Obama, whose preacher said, God blank America, who spent 20 years in a church that favors the destruction of America, and Romney let Obama get away with that, running like a big patriot? Hey, you got to be kidding me. And you don't think that a more effective type of campaign, a stronger, more effective type of campaign could have cut that, could have swung the election 2 points in Romney's direction? Of course it could have. Of course it could have. Brennan Fan. Let's all pray, Brennan Fan. I know that you do pray, Brennan Fan. I know what a good person you are, and I know you do pray. So let's all pray that somebody finally get us the funds we need to show what a real effective campaign looks like. You give us the money. You give us the budget to run an effective campaign, and you'll see. You'll see what happens. Just give us that chance. Anyway, thank you, Brennan Fan. I'm glad you asked that question. And now we go to the great Confederate Kahanist, who, by the way, loyally helped us with our videos and put up videos and really was in there for the whole fight during this whole campaign. God bless Confederate Kahanist. Confederate Kahanist writes, and I quote, "Do you think we should allow more high-skilled Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and Indian immigrants into the U.S.?" Unquote. Well, I'm not against if they're high skilled. I don't think there's anything wrong with letting them into the U.S. Indian immigrants, my only concern is they shouldn't be Muslim. There are a lot of Muslims live in India, and we should make sure that Muslims don't come into the United States. So I am concerned about Muslims coming in from India. Most of India is Hindu, but there is a large Muslim minority, and that can be a problem. But Confederate Kahanist, our problem isn't that we don't have enough skilled Chinese or Japanese or Korean immigrants in the U.S. Our problem is that we're losing America demographically and that we're going to have a culture, a third world culture, that's going to take over and destroy the United States. Confederate Kahanist, we in JTF have the solution. We have the solution. Europe is in desperate economic shape right now. America's economy, as bad as it is better than Europe's. America should invite Europeans to come to the United States. Europeans, millions of them, let them come into the United States. That will create more demographic balance. Isn't that a great proposal, Confederate Kahanist? Confederate Kahanist, don't you wish we had the money and we had the power to put our proposals on the table? Someday, hopefully we will, before it's too late. But if we had millions of Europeans coming in, and if we sealed the border, and if we throw out all the illegal aliens and don't give them amnesty, and if we arrest people that hire illegal aliens, and if we have a system for checking someone's immigration status in the a real foolproof system of checking someone's immigration status in the U.S., if we put all of those things into place, all of those programs into place, Confederate Kahanist, America does not have to become majority third world. It is possible to stop it if only we had leaders with just a little measure of guts. Just a little measure of guts and a little bit of willingness to be politically incorrect. If we had that, it's still doable. It's still doable. Let's hope that we get the ability to reach enough people with our very sane message before it's too late. Anyway, thank you, Confederate Kahanist, and I want to thank all of our great JTFers for another great show. Because of your questions, the show was great. And until next week, let's hope we have great news this week, and let's hope we have a very productive week of promoting our message and waking people up. Until next week, shalom.